Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, it's Tech Ninja Todd here. Excited to have you back for another episode of Edu All-Stars.
Session 7,
yes, thank you, Chris. Tonight we have an awesome guest here with us. We have Erin Klein. She is a teacher, author, and parent who has earned her Master's of Education in Curriculum and Instruction. She currently teaches second grade, but has taught 1st, 6th, 7th. She's also a technology chairperson for the Michigan Reading Association, a national A-plus workshop presenter, smart exemplary educator, really good stuff monthly blogger, Edutopia guest blogger, Edudemic guest blogger, magazine contributor, national writing project member, award-winning Edutech blogger, and she's recently appeared in the Scholastic Instructor magazine and is co-authoring a book called Amazing Grades with experts from around 13 different countries around the world.
Hey guys, it's Tech Ninja Todd here.
So,
excited to have you back.
Chris, do you want to go ahead and... Erin, we can...
Session 7.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Here we go.
Okay. I was like, what year was that? Weird. Okay, Chris.
Yeah. Hey, I'm Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler. And I was gonna make a cool joke about Aaron's long list of things, but I think it would go over not very well now. So anyway, yeah, we're really excited to have you here, Erin. I know we tried to schedule this earlier, but Todd is not very smart in the ways of converting time across the country. So I guess we'll.
Good thing he doesn't teach math or anything.
Yeah,
exactly.
In a tested area in Texas for sure. I know.
Well, and then our one person who's not here today is Tech Ninja Stacy. She is with her daughter at a school meeting to get a new tablet for school. So they're going one-to-one. So we wish her well, sending our love to her. But Erin, you want to go ahead and introduce yourself with your Twitter handle and all that?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at @KleinErin, K-L-E-I-N, and then my first name, Erin, E-R-I-N, and then my blog is KleinSpiration.com.
Awesome. Okay, so we'll just go ahead and jump on in. So tell us a little bit about your background kind of before you became a teacher and what kind of you were doing before that.
Before teaching, I was studying interior design at Michigan State for 3.5 years, and that's what I was going to school for. That's what I was passionate about. And then after Jason, my husband, and I knew that we were expecting our first child, Riley, I was a business person before I went in. So teaching was, even interior design was like a second thing for me. So I managed a business for about 4 years, even prior to studying interior design. So when Jason and I found out we were expecting our first daughter, I knew that interior design was not what I wanted to do. I kind of wanted to be in sync with her schedule, and I knew that especially after she was born, I just wanted to be around kids. Like, they're simply amazing. So that's when I started all over. My dad said, don't do it. Just finish interior design. Like, you are so close. And I said, no, I don't want to wait another semester, another year. This is what I definitely know I want to do. So I just kind of started all over. And obviously, I made the right choice.
Was there someone along the way that influenced you to make that decision, maybe a grade school teacher or someone, you know, in college that made you want to change that? Or
definitely there have been tons of great teachers. I don't have that one teacher per se. I've had a lot who have influenced me and been good mentors. The strongest one I have, though, is probably my former principal, who's now retired. Her and I still keep in touch, and but that was after I was already teaching that I established that strong relationship and having her as a mentor.
That's cool. I didn't realize that you weren't always a teacher, that you had all these other things that you were doing beforehand. Do you ever miss interior design or any of that?
Well, I decorate my classroom now.
Well, that's true. So you still get to use it.
I do. I'm really into, like, not cute classrooms, but aesthetically pleasing, brain-friendly environments. So
I like that.
Thank you. So that's currently what I'm, like, documenting the process of that transition right now. I've got a couple of different companies that I'm going to write blog posts for to share this documented process. So that's what I'm just taking, like, all of the agronomics, the aesthetics, everything that I've learned from from my interior design background. Not that I have a degree in it, because I was shy of that, but just what I have learned. And when I was 2 years ago, when I was at Madison, my other school, the one I was at before, we had a lot of training from highly effective teaching institute people who came into our school, specifically Linda Jordan, that worked one-on-one with our staff. And I always took advantage of having her come to my room one-on-one, into where she would watch me do model lessons and then for half of the day, and then I would leave for half of the day and sit down just one-on-one with this specialist in brain-friendly environments and highly effective teaching, and she would kind of coach me. And I did that about once every 6 weeks throughout my entire first year of teaching. So it was a good experience for me. And we had consultants come in from all over just to help. We did everything in our school and in our classrooms. It's kind of Montessori-ish, just bringing everything down to the children's eye level, like even thinking about like the number line in your classroom. I used to have it like bordering the top perimeter of my ceiling, and it's like, why is it way up there? So just bringing it down to like 3 feet off the floor, killing the overhead fluorescent lighting, bringing it all to incandescent and natural lighting, very earth tones, not hot pink, not polka dots, but just very monochromatic color schemes. So,
you know, these are things that I never even think about, some of the things you were listing. Like, if I were to put a number line up, I would put it up above my board or things like that. That's interesting. I've never even thought about the eye level stuff and all that.
Yeah, so it was interesting. There is a lot of research and data on it if people are interested. There's a book that Susan Kovalik has written called Highly Effective Teaching, and there's it's not a program, it's not a script, it's just research and different models that you can adopt. So that's been kind of like my go-to guide when setting up things for my classroom.
Awesome. Now, I know that you write quite a bit. Have you always been a writer at heart?
Ever since second grade. Like, I specifically remember, yeah, second grade.
So you've always loved writing.
Yeah, I always have. It was like, it was that one inspirational teacher who, I mean, this was years ago, obviously, but we had to write a book report, and on any book that we read, and just kind of pretty much do a summary of it. But I remember there was going to be a contest in our classroom. I mean, this is something like we would never do now. Like, we're going to judge your writing against each other. But this is what we did, you know. And we had to, one at a time, what a daunting task, stand up and read your entire report. And then I think the class judged and the teacher judged, so it was like combined or something. But I remember I was so nervous about it, and I didn't go into it thinking that like I was going to win this book report. Like, you're just nervous, right? So I ended up winning. I think everyone might, now looking back on it, I think everyone might have won and gotten a little award or something. But I just remember like thinking that I won, and because I had like this little ribbon attached to my paper, and it was like all these great comments. So I was like, I'm a writer, like, this is great, like, this is what I must do, you know, because I was not a good math student. I never got those papers back. So ever since then, you know, and I did debate in high school, and I traveled around the country competing, doing that, went to nationals and stuff. So I've always kind of, like, enjoyed writing in the process. So.
Well, you know, I think it's cool that that one instance you remember in second grade, and that you were, like, look at that as your starting point of knowing you wanted to write, and that that impact that had on you. I think that's really interesting. I didn't know that.
Thank you. I wish someone would have done that, like, for math with me. I'm like, man, I could be doing some cool things now.
Yeah,
it was fun. It was a good experience.
Well, Chris was supposed to take the next question, but his internet dropped out. He just texted me. He's rebooting his computer, so he'll join us here in a minute. But I know that you write for a lot for different education companies. How did that come about, where that opportunity arose for you?
I think just kind of reaching out, like, I love meeting new people and connecting, and I enjoy so much reading the content on other blogs. Are you referring to like Edutopia and Edudemic, really good stuff, and Scholastic? So I mean, they're wonderful sites. They're a collection of wonderful bloggers that I followed, like their individual blogs, and then I would notice that their writing was on these other sites. Kind of like community platforms. And I just, you know, kind of reached out to people and said, hey, I've got this idea for a guest post. If you're interested, let me know. And it just kind of worked out. The really good stuff connection actually happened through a contest. Someone had submitted my blog, and I ended up winning first place for elementary blog of the year or something. And one of the awards was you get to blog for them for a year. So that's kind of how I made that connection.
Wow.
I think about 2 years ago. And then through Scholastic, I'll be blogging for them weekly starting in late August, possibly early September. But I just got back from New York for training with them. So mm-hmm. they actually found my blog and reached out to me through the contact on my blog. And I received it in my email. And, of course, I was, like, super excited to pursue that. And
how do you find the time? Because you're a mother, too. You're not just teaching.
You know, I kind of, like, write the post in my head. And you should see my voice notes. My memory on my phone is a lot of my blog posts are written like right before I go to bed or in the car driving. I'll just put my phone on my lap and I'm just like talking out loud.
Yeah.
And then later I just type it up really quick. But I wake up early. I wake up at 5:30, mm-hmm. and then the kids get up around 7. So I, you know, some people grab the newspaper. I go to Triver and read like all my friends' blogs that I follow.
Mm-hmm.
And I have my coffee, and I have HGTV playing in the background, so I kind of get my design show in and read my blogs and have my coffee. So the summer, I try and catch up and schedule a lot out. But, yeah, I think just balance.
Now, I've always found that my best blogging ideas, or what I consider to be my best, who knows if they're my best, come when I'm driving. Is there a certain time when your ideas pop up the best?
Yeah, driving is key. In the shower, too.
and those are the two worst times to
I know,
have.
Because
I'll be driving and I'm like, right? God, I just want to pull over and write the entire post. I have it all in my head. I know if I wait the hour till I get somewhere, I'm going to forget it all.
I know. No, that's funny. I had the same thing. I used to have about an hour and a half commute to work. This was last year. And I would just get so many ideas. And the poor kids, Riley and Jacob, just because of the long commute, they would fall asleep in the morning on the way. So it was just my mind would just kind of go. And, you know, you're getting excited. You're about to be at school. So you're thinking about your day. And I think just the early morning, like, you're fresh, all these ideas.
See, that's when I go to school about an hour and a half early, too, so I can get there and do some writing, because that's when I'm at my – because I like getting up early, too. I can't write – during the school year, I can't write at night. I just don't have the energy anymore. I mean, during the summer, that's when I do my writing now, but I'm the same way as you.
Yeah, so I try and get you'll see that my the quantity of writing is greatly reduced during the school year. My priorities on what I do in the classroom.
Yeah.
But during the summer, I'm able to pump out more, I guess.
Now, why if somebody was to ask you, Erin, why do you blog, what would be the answer you give them?
Well, I do it because I feel like I steal a lot of really good ideas from other people, and I do them in my own room. And so then when I actually feel like I have somewhat of an original idea, or, I mean, gosh, none of my ideas are original, but, like, maybe I heard something somewhere along the way and tried it and it worked, it was like, ooh, this worked for me and my kids, so maybe it can work for someone else and their kids. So I'm like, even if it helps one person, like, I should probably share it since all the stealing I do from everyone else.
Right.
So that's why I do it, but that's not why I started doing it. Why I started doing it was I wanted to attend conferences, and my principal told me, hey, all these conferences cost money, Klein. Like, they're not free. And I was like, well, if you present, they're free. So I started presenting just so that I could go for free. And then he couldn't really say no. And I was like, I'll meet up with someone. I'll split a hotel room. And so it'll be really cheap for you. So then when I started presenting, people in the sessions always wanted your resources. Well, where can I find this? So I started a Weebly website, and then I just realized I loved it. But then there weren't, like, sharing plugins, and it wasn't very social. It was just more static. So everyone's like, you have to do a blog. And I was like, I don't want to do a blog. Like, it's not as pretty as my Weebly website. But I eventually kind of, like, made the transition. So
so what blogging platform do you currently use then?
You know, I use Blogger.
Blogger.
I want to move towards WordPress. But that's a learning curve for me. So
yeah, it is. And this is something that Todd and I have talked a lot about. WordPress is amazing. That's what our site is hosted on is WordPress. But there is a huge learning curve. Where it comes after the learning curve, you get to do a lot more cool things with it. But there is that learning curve there. So we were talking about writing just a really hands-on article on how to exactly set up a WordPress blog for education. We just haven't got around to it yet because we're always doing something else. But that's something that definitely we want to be doing. Because I learned WordPress early on. I think it was back in 2005 or 6 or something, and I've never done anything other than that. But it can do some really, really cool stuff for you.
Yeah, it's all the great sites that I look at that, they're just clean. They're easy to navigate. They're amazing. They're all WordPress. Yeah. There's some great ones out there that aren't, but it seems like WordPress is definitely where I want to end up.
Right.
I haven't had the time yet to kind of learn it the way
seen people posting online about moving over to WordPress and how it takes them forever to figure out how to get everything over, and I'm like, see, that's why I don't want, I'll just stay on Blogger.
Yeah, that's another thing too. I don't know. Yeah, it's going to be a big decision.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we always talk about, a lot of our guests that we have on have quite a large following on Twitter, or are very active on Twitter. Can you tell us more about how you got started and your journey on Twitter?
Originally I started Twitter because I was in a PD session with Tony Vincent. Our district had him come in at the ISD, and when he came, the first thing he did was, this is probably about 4 years, I don't know, 2009 or 10 or something, he made everyone get on Twitter, and I had no idea. I knew what Twitter was, but even creating your handle, I had never even heard the word handle before, and it's every handle was taken, and it's geez, I can't get any name that I want. So my original handle was MI from Michigan, and then Madison, because that's the school I taught at, and then my last name. So it was my Madison Klein, kind of. And it was really long, but you only have 140 characters, and I didn't realize that. So I got on, and then for the session, I didn't tweet anything out. I didn't know I was supposed to be doing that. I didn't know what it was for. I just thought it was because we were supposed to follow him in case we had questions later. We could contact him instead of email. He didn't want to be bothered. I had no idea. So I kind of just left it for a couple of years. And then I started picking it back up again at conferences, I think, was probably when I really saw the benefit of it, connecting face-to-face with people who I had read their books or attended their sessions or stalked their blog or mm-hmm. something. It was whoa, I have a chance to meet these super duper amazing people face to face. And I was I have to go where everybody else is. And apparently that's on Twitter. So that's kind of what got me started with it.
So we've asked this question to a couple of the other guests, and I'm just kind of curious to hear your response. They say you're sitting around a room at school and you're talking about, oh, I saw this tweet last night, and then you have five teachers that go, what's a tweet? Why are you on Twitter? How do you explain to them what Twitter is and how it can help them? Sorry, I didn't mean to stump you. I guess what?
No,
it depends
where I am.
Yeah, what were the benefits to just a classroom teacher? How can they benefit from being on Twitter?
Yeah, it depends where I am. At my school, I'm not as open about it.
Yeah.
But if I'm just at a conference talking with teachers about, oh, why should I do Twitter? I'm just really honest with them, and I just tell them my story. And I think seeing is believing. Mm-hmm. So, pulling up examples of, hey, Brad and Drew share this great example on augmented reality. I would have no idea about this if I were not on Twitter. Look what they've done. And then showing them, actual examples. Or, hey, have you read Digital Writing Workshop by Troy Hicks? He's on Twitter. You can connect with him. He's here in Michigan, too, by the way. Did you know that? Or, oh, my goodness, Donna Lynn Miller, The Book Whisperer. That was my first, big aha moment, was when I was at a conference and Donna Lynn Miller was there. And people were like, oh, yeah, she just tweeted out that she's at Starbucks. And I was like, seriously? Wow, that's amazing. So, of course, I was, running across the campus.
Let me go to Starbucks.
And So I think just like sharing those examples and then showing people, like pulling up authors, that children's book authors that are on Twitter and saying, here, watch this. Like right now in real time, I'm going to tweet the author of Pinkalicious. And chances are she's going to reply. And then when it happens, they're just like, oh my God, that's so cool. And then your job is done.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Now,
was there a part, well, I mean, did it take you a while to become on Twitter where you actually shared things?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, I was the, you know, lurker or whatever for a while. I stalked Richard Byrne, Kelly Tinkley, Beth Still, like, all Steven Anderson, of course. Like, I stalked all of those people for a while and just, like, I remember just laying in bed with Jason and, you know, Jacob and Riley just watching TV, and here I am on Twitter, and George Kuros always shares, like, funny videos and, like, inspirational videos, and I just remember, like, always watching that. And then Twitter for me is when I found out about, like, when we caught Osama bin Laden. You know, I was laying in bed checking my Twitter feed right before I fell asleep to set my alarm clock. And I was like, I remember, like, nudging Jason, like, hey, guess what just happened? And he's like, what? And I was like, something's going on. Like, this is big. Turn on the TV. So I think just my life has become more, it's my news, it's my connecting to my friends, it's keeping in touch, it's fine, it's learning, it's kind of everything. Because it's in real time and it's convenient.
Well, I love that point you make about the news, because, I mean, there's two things I think of. One is this social media video that Eric Schoeniger showed that talks about how people in New York heard about an earthquake in New York 30 seconds before they felt it. Mm-hmm. And then I think about, like, the Boston bombing. Whenever yeah. they were chasing those guys, everybody that I knew was getting all their information from Twitter, and my wife and I were watching the news, and it's like the news was 10 minutes behind.
It's true,
information came so much faster on social media.
Do you watch Newsroom on HBO?
Nuh-uh.
Oh my God, you totally have to. It's so good. They just, their latest episode, they're trying to find out about this one potential segment that they might highlight. And Twitter is one of the resources that they're kind of going back through the archives of looking for, because they know that the information they need will be there because somebody somewhere saw it and they tweeted it. You know, they didn't post it on a blog. They didn't post it on a website. It's not Facebook. It's
right.
Twitter. Yep.
That's cool. I'll have to look into that. Now,
yeah, I've heard good
yeah.
things about Newsroom, yeah.
See, and I've heard a lot about it. I've just never checked it out. Now, I know one of the new things that you introduced me to is Triber. I am loving that platform. Can you kind of talk about what it is and how you found it?
Yeah, for sure. Triber is definitely nothing new. It's new-ish to me because I've just started really taking advantage of it. It's a social platform that curates blogs and allows for easy sharing. So, and it's free. And it's web-based. There's not an app. So you go to Triber.com, you set up a free account, and then you can ask to be members of certain tribes. Now, when you set up a tribe, you become the chief, and it kind of sounds funny. And then you have, like, members of your tribe. But really what it means is just, like, you're the one who kind of started it, and then everybody else is a member, and so when you start it, the free account, you can have, I believe, up to 25 members of your tribe. So once you have 25, if other people want to be a member, you kind of have to be like, I'm so sorry, we already have 25 right now. Otherwise, you're going to have to pay. Yeah. And then the chief ends up being responsible for paying the premium, and it's monthly. So you can go up to 50 members of your tribe if you pay $10 a month. But so what it is if you have, let's say, the free account and you have 25 members of your tribe, you're all really equal. Like, the chief doesn't matter. Like, it's that's your tribe. Like, there are 25 of you. And you add your blog RSS feed into Triber. And then so when you go into the activity feed, all of these 25 members of your tribe, their blog is right there in a scrolling feed. So you can see person X, person Y, person Z, all of their newest content. So that's what I do in the morning. I log into Triber, and I just kind of scroll through the new activity feed so I can see all of the blogs that I follow, all their newest content is right there. So I just click on it, I go to their blog, and I read it. And I'm trying to be really diligent about commenting on every post that I read. That's just like a goal for myself. I mean, if I'm not like inspired and don't have anything to add, I'm not going to leave like a lame comment. Right. But that's not the case with the blogs that I read. I'm almost always inspired by what my friends write. So I try, unless, of course, the kids are in the background and I'm in a hurry. It's a goal of mine to try and comment. So anyway, I link to their blog, I read it, I try and leave a comment, and then I go back into Triber and I'll share it out. Now, you can read it directly in Triber. You don't have to leave, but I like going to see my friends' blogs. I like seeing their sidebars. I like seeing their headers. You know, I like just being in their space. So
I think that was one of the cool things about Triber is you don't lose your unique content. It actually, you know, it stays on your site. It's just done all through the feed. So a lot of sites, you know, you write this great unique content, but then it's stuck in this site that you don't own, and they, you know, they get all the credit on all the search engine credit for, you know, from your content, where you don't get any of that value, which I think kind of stinks. So.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And another part that I like about Triber is like the private back channel kind of conversation. It reminds me of when you take an online class and you have to like respond to this person's blog, and then but you can have conversations in other areas like on Blackboard or something. I like the conversation part because you can pose a question, anybody can reply. So there's all of this rich conversation happening too, kind of behind the scenes, behind closed walls, with just your closest friends. So that's nice too.
And I like how easy it is to share the blogs out. I mean, that's why I like being a part of this, because it's like sometimes I forget to go check certain blogs because there's so many I like. And with Triber, I can be a part of a tribe, a bunch of people blogging that I really enjoy, and it's easy for me to check them out and then share them really easily with my followers.
Yep, absolutely. That's definitely one of the best parts.
So earlier this afternoon, I watched a YouTube video that you created, and I think it was maybe done last year. It's called About Me. It's a little 5-minute video with a bunch of slides.
Oh, geez. Like, what was that?
So one of the things you mentioned was that you kind of like to design your classrooms around a Barnes & Noble. They're kind of your inspiration for the classroom. And then I looked at your blog, and you talk a lot about you know, classroom layout and, you know, going without desks this year and those kinds of things. I just want you to talk about layout, and especially with your interior design background.
Yeah, we touched on it a little bit. I think it was when you were rebooting.
Oh, sorry.
No, that's okay. I'll do like a brief synopsis.
No, you don't have to get into it again. Todd, do we need to move forward?
Well, no, but we didn't get a chance to talk about why you're choosing to go without desks this year. And that's what I find the most interesting.
Okay. First of all, the About Me video was probably for like my self-evaluation I had to turn in for my administrator. I'm like, I don't know what you're watching. that's probably what it was. It was like, reflect on the entire year, and I had to do like an About Me video. I think that's what it was. So what I did for no desks, the room that I'm in, the space that I have, is so charming. It used to be the music room, and we're in a very historic building. So I'm fortunate that all the windows are stained glass. It's so picturesque. It's sick. However, because it was not originally designed to be a classroom, it is long and narrow. So it makes for a really tight fit whenever you have desks in there. So what I noticed was, I mean, for the amount of students that I have in the room and the space and the shape of the room, for me trying to navigate to facilitate like working with different small groups or collaborative partnerships or anything, you know, I was literally like, I mean, think about it. When you're standing up next to a child and you're squeezing by their seat, like, you know, where's their face? You know, it's like, it's a very tight space. And it's like, this is just not working out. So I started like refraining from moving around the room. And I was like, this is just not working out. It's too tight. Like these poor children, like, you know, they're not getting the best view of me. Like this is just not good. We need to like spread out. And plus the desks themselves were just huge. And they only fit 2 kids. So it wasn't working. They had these huge metal compartments in the middle that separated them. And, of course, that was for the kids to put all their materials. But it's like any time I said turn eye to eye, knee to knee, the kids were, like, bumping their knees, and they're like, ow. And they were shouting because they were so far, because the desks were so big, and they're so tiny because they're 7 and 8, and it was a bad combination for the shape of the room. So I just started thinking, like, what could I put in here? And when I did my student teaching, we had tables. I was like, why not? Like, that just makes sense. Any library or multimedia type area or Barnes & Noble or Starbucks, it's like you have comfortable chairs. You have tables that allow for conversation. So why not have that sort of environment and layout in the classroom? I mean, that's ultimately what you want. I mean, think about the dinner table where you're supposed to have the best, most engaging, rich, reflective conversation and bonding. And the dinner tables, they're usually round or square, and everyone's sitting around it talking, discussing. And that's kind of what I wanted, is to like bring that into my room, to bring that vibe. So I said, why not bring a breakfast nook table? So that's what I did. Because the space is limited, I ordered those corner booths that, you know, you see at restaurants.
Yeah, yeah.
So it'll tuck right into the corner. So it takes up like hardly any floor space, but supplies ample seating. And so, I mean, you can cram a lot of little guys in there. You know, they're second graders. You can put like 4 on each side of the bench, and then you can even pull up chairs around the exterior edges. I mean, you can have, I mean, potentially like 8 to 10 kids right there. I mean, how cool, right? Just grab your iPads, go over to the table, and just plan, create something, do something fun. And so that's the type of environment that I'm setting up this year. It's a hot mess right now, though. I don't know if
I saw the pictures. I was like, yeah. Whoa, that's a overwhelming job.
Yeah, well, I'm decluttering, too. I want, like, hardly anything in the room, because everything that will be in the room, I want it. If it's not, like, a material for the kids to create something, then it probably doesn't belong in the room. Right. So the stuff that will be in the room are materials for the children to be able to create with. And I don't, and then of course books. But other than that, books for them to read. Other than that, it probably doesn't belong in there.
Right. So if somebody were to tell you or ask you, Aaron, what are you really passionate about right now in education? What would you tell them that you're really passionate about?
Oh, hold on 1 second. Sorry. What?
Okay.
It's in the cabinet above the
sink.
Yeah, on the left side of the sink. Sorry, very important question about popcorn salt. Riley's having a sleepover. And they're watching Teen Beach Movie for like, you know, because they haven't seen it every day this summer. What I'm passionate about in education, you know, it seems so simple, but it's not anything specific. It's finding out what kids want, period. Like, that's kind of what drives me. Like, every time I'm with my nieces and nephews, Jason, my husband, he's 1 of 6, so there's 15 nieces and nephews, and now the older nieces and nephews are having their own kids, and I love even the chance to talk to them, like, what are your teachers like? Who are the really awesome teachers? What are they doing? Like, what do you like about it? You know, are you on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram? Like, what do you like? What do you do? And I just asked at Riley's party on Sunday, we had Sam and Paige, my niece and nephew, they're both in high school, sophomore and senior, and I said, the social media question I asked him, and I said, what platforms do you use? And Paige, without hesitation, she's like, Twitter, like, duh. And then Sam, he was like, oh, I don't use those. He's like, what I do the most is I'm on Reddit. And I was like, ah, very cool. Like, so I just like finding out like what kids are into, what kids like, and then how, and it's different every year. It's different with the kids that you have. So what can I do to make learning more specialized for the group that I have each year. So that's what I'm passionate about.
Do you guys post on Reddit? I just haven't gotten into that one yet. You guys do anything there?
I read it.
Yeah.
But I haven't contributed.
Yeah, I haven't done it. It just seems so. Craigslist is an ugly site. Reddit is even uglier than that. I just, a horribly ugly site. So the next thing we got is that since our listeners are predominantly educators, what advice would you give them to achieve kind of some of the successes you've had? You've been able to travel all over the country, speaking at, you know, big conferences, doing all kinds of things on other people's dimes. what kind of advice could you give to someone that was interested in maybe pursuing that?
I would just say, like, kind of know what you're getting yourself into. You just mentioned, like, on other people's dimes. Time is something that is very expensive. So even though like the trips are paid for and the presentations you get compensated for, when you kind of calculate out the time that you put in to your presentations, and then the time on the road, the travel, the time at the conference, and when you are presenting, you're not just in your session and then you're done. You have people that contact you weeks even after the conference. Can you send me this resource? Can you share this with me? And it's wonderful. I mean, you feel so excited, like, wow, they liked what I shared. Of course I'll send it to you. But don't for a second think that when your session's over, you know, that your kind of responsibility is done. So it might seem, you know, nice, but when you calculate it all out, like, it's, you know, you have to love what you do because it isn't about the money.
Yeah.
It's about connecting with people and making those relationships. And, I mean, even, like, Todd, like, I had no idea I knew kind of who he was, but we connected, like, hardcore ISTE, and I was just like, tell me what you're doing. How can I learn more? Share everything you can with me. You know, like, let me see inside your classroom, like, I couldn't get enough just from the blog. Like, I had to connect with him in person to find out more. So I think those experiences are invaluable. So I think that if you're wanting to kind of pursue that, it's fun. I mean, I do it, I love it, and I'm not going to stop doing it. But you are away from home a lot. Like, people are always like, you're a mom, you're away from your kids. And I'm strategic with, I've got a wonderful husband. Without him, I would not be able to do it. So I think that, you know, you have to have a good spouse, or if you're like Drew, like, you're single and you don't have kids and it just works.
It's way easier that way.
Yeah, it's way easier. But
Todd, who just brings his wife everywhere he goes and takes her to the zoo afterwards.
Nice. Those are cute pictures too. But, you know, people, I know, because even some of my closest friends are like, Erin, you have, like, not even been home this summer. When I am home, I'm very, very present with my kids. Tonight we're doing this, and Riley's having a sleepover. So, like, that's fun for her. So she's occupied. She doesn't feel, like, neglected. And it's actually her very first sleepover, so she's really excited.
Oh, man.
So, but when I'm here, I'm very present with my children. But they are deprived from my mom and dad because they just moved to, they were in Chicago and now they're in Ohio, so they never get to see my mom and dad, and they used to live 9 houses down from us. So my children are very close with my parents, but since they've moved, they hardly get to see them. So when I knew I was going to ISTE, it's like, oh, that's the block of time you're going to spend with Nana and Papa. So they loved it. And then they wanted, like, Riley's been really wanting to go to this horseback camp. So it was, when I'm going to X conference, you're going to go to this camp. So it's not.
So it's very planned out.
It is. It's very planned out. So I find out where I'm going and when I'm going and then kind of what works best for my family so that they can have fun too.
I love that. Well, you brought up ISTE and you brought up Twitter and all this, and I was going to say, you know, one thing that was so cool to me about ISTE was I had been following you for a while, and, you know, some people with these huge number of Twitter followers, they can seem like these unapproachable people in real life. And I remember you and I had connected online a week or two probably before ISTE and kind of hit it off. We had a Google Hangout like the day or two before we got there, and then I remember seeing you from across the street when I got to ISTE, and I was like, oh my gosh, do I say anything? Do I know her well enough to yell at her? And I was like, forget it. I'm just going on. And I was like, Erin, from across the street. And I remember you turning around and screaming, Todd. And then we said,
we're like running across the highway. Like, you know,
like we'd ever met before.
It was awesome.
And you know, the one thing that I thought that was one of my really cool moments at ISTE, to see somebody that I had just had a virtual, very limited friendship with, and then to meet you in person and see how personable and warm and sharing and everything, and it was like we had known each other for years. Is that important for you to kind of put off that kind of personality so that, I mean, because I know there are some people that I meet and they are nothing like they seem to be online. And for you, it was like I was meeting the exact person I was thinking I was going to meet.
iPad Sammy.
There you go. No. I could seek my revenge. No.
That's not true.
But I don't know. I just funny. I thought about it and I thought, you know what, that I don't know. I have these images of people from their virtual selves, and I always think, oh, they're not going to want to talk to me, or they don't know who I am, or it's not going to matter because they have this many followers or whatever. But, I mean, it really stuck out that somebody, like, that you were mm-hmm. that personable and oh, and warm.
Aw, thank you. It's like, I want my mom to be listening. Or like, see? I'm nice. No, and then I love that you say that because I always have to keep in the front of my mind, like, people are going to think that I'm not nice just because I'm really, really shy. Like, I'm one of those crazy people, not in my basement, but, like, you would imagine, like, in the basement who are just on the computer all the time, but then, yeah, like, when you meet them in person, it's, like, they don't talk. You know, like, that's how I am. Like, I'm very shy and very introverted, and so I almost have to feel like when I'm at the Bloggers Cafe or, you know, it's, like, I have to, like, pretend like I'm acting something so people don't think that, like, I'm mean, but really I'm just shy. But so, like, if I feel like someone's looking at me, like, I'll try and, like, smile just so I'm, like, not, you know, I don't know, it's yeah. weird, like, because I am really shy. And there was the tweet up at ISTE, and at one point, like, I was talking to somebody, it was a great conversation, and then all of a sudden I realized, like, I felt like I was at a middle school dance, and you look around and, like, everyone else is talking to someone and you're standing there in the middle of the room and, like, you have no friends and you're just standing there, and I'm like, oh my, so I just went on a walk, like, by myself. I'm like, I have to act like I'm doing something. Like, I can't just stand in the middle of this room not talking to anybody. Like, this is awkward. And so I don't know. I don't try and put off any personality of yeah. who I am, who I'm not. I try and, I guess, just not pretend like I'm shy, because I think that can be perceived when people see that you're quiet and reserved. They might think that you're, like, stuck up or something. So yeah. I try and, I guess, if anything, like, be more outgoing. But it was weird. Like, when you and I met online, you were so nice to let me kind of be a wallflower and listen to your conversation about elementary flipped classroom, and I was so interested in that, and I was happy to be a part of it. And then knowing that you were going to be at ISTE, I really looked forward to meeting you. And then, like you said, when we saw each other that early morning, we were on a walk, and it was like, oh my god, like, that's Todd, how cool. And then you came over, and then we took our picture together, and it was like, yeah. I really hoped that, like, that would not have been the end of it, like, that we would see each other again and get a chance to connect and hang out. And then we ended up spending the whole conference together. It was fabulous. Yeah. And it was really, really good. I think some people you just click with. Like, there are definitely people who I've met, who I admire, who I think are wonderful, but it's just, you know, something you just don't click, and it yeah. doesn't mean that you like them more or less. It's just, you know, they're yeah, they're awesome, yeah. but you just don't vibe. But there have been some people like Amber and Joan and Angela, just mm-hmm. that you, like, meet along the way. Like, I met Amber in person for the first time at ASCD in Chicago this year, and it was like, now we're best friends. It's like, this is just crazy, you know? Some people you just instantly connect with and feel really comfortable with.
Well, and you know, the other thing that I found so interesting at ISTE about you, and I don't think you'll care about me bringing this up, but you were an Ignite presenter, and I view you as somebody who presents all the time, but you got really nervous before the Ignite, didn't you?
Yeah, extremely yeah. nervous. I always do, because, you know, what freaks me out the most is the back channel, because you don't know the conversation that's happening as you're presenting.
Yeah.
So you say one wrong thing, the world immediately knows. Like, oh, geez. So I always wonder, you know, how is this being perceived? And I think being like a perfectionist warrior, like, I always want to do a good job. I don't want to waste people's time. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I almost wish like the Twitter feed was up, like on a view screen in front of you, so like you could tailor your presentation as you're giving it. Because like that's what I do with my students. You know, I can see like if they're glazing over, I know to get them up out of their seats or something. But it's like when you're presenting, and especially if the people are further away from you, like you can't, and your slides are already submitted, like you're stuck. You got to go with it. You're committed now. But I think that, yeah, I really get nervous presenting just because I want to do a good job and I want people to feel, you know, that they got something out of it. So I always want it. And plus you put so much time in what you do, it's mm-hmm. you want it to go over well. So I always get nervous, like, are people going to like this? I hope so.
And I love that, I mean, even with the success that you've had, that's still such a very real, honest part of you that still has these parts where you get nervous. Because I present all the time too, but I still freak out before every single time for the exact same reasons you were talking about. What are people going to say? Is anybody even going to like what I have to say? Or is it going to bomb and then it's going to be all over Twitter that I was the worst presenter?
Yeah, and I think that, you know, people, there's so many sessions that they could go to, and they chose to go to yours for a reason.
Right.
So it's like, no pressure, but you better deliver. Because we've all been in the sessions where you walk out and you're like, I am so glad I went to that session. And then you've been to those, and it was like, yeah, it was good, but man, I was debating on these two, and I kind of wish I would have went to the other one. You know, I never want people to, like, have that feeling. So.
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about the book that you kind of just came out with, Amazing Grades. And did you co-author that, or did you write a piece in there? Or
a piece,
how,
yeah. Okay, it was, okay. There was 13 of us, and we all like co-authored it together and contributed. I was asked to do it based on – to be like the educational voice. It's not an educational book, even though it's called Amazing Grades. It's more like just how to help students studying and to do well in school. So it has doctors in it. It has all sorts of different professionals in the book contributing, even advice on parents who might have a child who has ADHD or autism on kind of how strategies to help. So it's a really good resource book for parents, really, or like graduating seniors or, you know, early college students. But so mine was on productivity apps, really, for tablets, for study habits. So that was my chapter that I submitted. And that was last year that the book was out. Okay. And then now I'm working on a book with Troy Hicks on digital writing, and that's published through Teachers College. So we're actually currently collaborating on that piece right now.
Oh, when is that going to come out?
We're hoping I think this time next year. I'm not 100%, but we're kind of just going through all the protocols right now and evaluating different student work pieces. And so it's been a really intense and very fun process so far.
Cool. So now you can say you co-authored two books.
Yeah, it's fun. I eventually it's on the bucket list to like do my own one day, but yeah. That's when the children graduate. Like,
and you have more time to just sit and write.
Yeah, I don't think I'm ready for that yet. It's a lot of time involved. So yeah. I'll stick to blog post for now.
Well, you know, one thing we always ask our guests, and this is kind of the question where they're like, what do I share? But every one of us has failed at some point in our career or made a big mistake or said, God, we'll never do that again. Is there one of those moments that really sticks out to you in your educational career where you're like, wow, that was a huge mistake?
I think my very first interview that I went on to go teaching, I bombed it. Like, I knew during the interview that I was bombing it, and it was, like, too late. Like, there was nothing I could do. It was, like, just digging my hole deeper. So that was – I started almost even questioning, like what happened? Like, it was bad. But I didn't give up. And then – I spoke with my husband, who was, like, really, really helpful. And I'm reflecting and thinking now, what was the question again? Because I don't want to go
a time that you've, like, you failed and you or you felt like, God, we'll never do that again or something like that.
Yeah, I'm stuck on that, like, teaching one, but that's not, like, what you're
asking. No, but I think that's – I mean – I liked your answer about the interview, and you bombed it. Is that what you said, or?
Oh, it was really bad. Like, at one point, we end up talking about, like, dogs. Like, no joke, like, how did that happen? We're talking about dachshunds in the interview, and not because it went so well that you've made those personal connections. Like, no, it went that bad. Like, it was terrible. And then coming to find out on the EdCamp organizer committee for EdCamp Detroit, Bethany, one of the girls that's on it with me, she works at the school where I interviewed and totally bombed. And I was like, just through conversation, I was like, do you know I interviewed at your school? And she was like, what? They didn't hire you? Oh, my gosh. I was like, no, no, it was bad. And she's like, oh, I don't believe you. And I was like, trust me, it was terrible. But then, you know, I learned from it. I remember in the car, like, before I even left the parking lot, like, I couldn't even cry. Like, I was just so mad at myself and so, like, surprised. It was like an out-of-body experience. Like, who was that person? And, like, what was she doing? Because I had managed a business for a number of years. Like, that's, I interview people. I was hiring that, you know, it's like, God, like, I was embarrassed for myself. Like, it wasn't even myself in that interview. It was kind of crazy. And I talked to my husband about it, and he's like, you said what? And I was like, yeah, that just happened. And so he was like, he worked with me, and he was like, he was great. So the next interview that I went on, I got that job, and it was perfect. But yeah, that was an experience that I was like, that will never happen again. I will never let the interview or the position or the circumstance control my plan for what I'm going to say. Like, if I have a message that I want conveyed, no matter what the question is, you will hear my answers.
Right.
So I don't know if that makes sense. That sounds kind of bossy. But, like, if I want you to hear about project-based learning or the passion that I have for students, I don't care if you're asking me about technology. My answers will be based on a student's right. in a classroom. So I will not let the interview control, you know, what I'm going to say. I know what I'm going to say before I go in there. It doesn't matter what the questions are.
Yeah, that's great advice.
Todd. Go ahead, Chris.
No, I don't have anything.
Okay. Well, Aaron, you know, we are so happy to have you on here and have you talk. And, you know, I'm excited, too, because you're our first Edu All-Stars female that we're going to feature.
Yay, why is that?
I know.
Seven episodes.
You know, you were supposed to be on episode 3.
True,
and then
true.
I screwed that up.
Yes.
But, so that was my fault. But it's because we wanted to feature you earlier. But thank you for coming on. I mean, it was great getting to talk and hear you share your story. I learned some awesome things about you as well. Do you want to go ahead and share, well, as we close out, just some kind of ways people can find you if they want to find you online?
Yep, mainly on Twitter. I reply to Twitter before I reply to email. It's always just the quickest and easiest. So just my handle is @KleinAaron. And then I do have on my blog, a lot of people email me through my blog. My email is not listed on my blog, but I have a contact page with like a submission form that people can fill out, and that goes directly to my email, and I reply to that. But and then on my blog post, you can always comment. I do have like LinkedIn, Google+, all of those, and all those plugins are on the sidebar of my blog if anyone wants to connect with me that way.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you for chatting with us. And for those listening, the ways you can connect with us, we are on Twitter at EduAllStarsHQ. You can follow us for all the latest updates on who we're going to be interviewing next, where you can find old things. Our website is eduallstars.com, where you can also find this interview. And you can find it on iTunes as well by searching EduAllStars, no spaces, one word. And we would really appreciate y'all going out and checking out our iTunes. We've had some exciting days where we've been number one or number two, so it's been fun to watch that.
Yeah, I don't know if you guys could tell or not, but I actually dropped out the first 15 minutes of this interview because of some technology issues at the house, so I'm going to have to go back and listen to the first part before I write up the show notes. But we have lots of great guests coming up. Next guests we have in line are two guys and some iPads. That's Brad Wade and Drew Minock, and they're going to be talking about augmented reality. We're going to try a video podcast for the first time because they're going to show some cool things that way. And then lastly, if you've made it this far, we just really encourage you to go and give us some feedback on iTunes. Leave a rating there. Leave us some feedback. If you like the show, if you hated it, then go away. Don't log in iTunes. So, anyway, we really appreciate Aaron joining us tonight and taking the time out of her evening to do this with us. It was awesome. Thanks.
No, I love talking to you guys. Super fun. And I love that Todd says y'all, and then you say you guys. So it's like,
I do say y'all. I think I'm trying to be more professional, though.
Hey, there is nothing unprofessional about y'all if you were from the South.
Todd actually tweets in Texan speak, too. He says fixin' in his tweets.
Hey, but let me tell you, Chris will try to call me out on Twitter, and then half of his things are spelled wrong, and then he'll tweet back, and he'll be like, utter fail. I can't even make a complete sentence. So, but thank you. We'll go ahead and end this now.
Yeah.